Thanks for listening to Vermont Edition. I'm Rick Zingari, and I just want you to know that we've edited this podcast for brevity, so you hear all the good stuff quicker. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. In May, the United States started imposing a 25% import tariff on steel and a 10% tariff on aluminum produced in Canada. On July 1st, Canada Day, Canada retaliated, imposing fees on everything from American steel and aluminum to American maple syrup and orange juice. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has declared the U.S. tariffs a turning point in U.S.-Canadian relations. As neighbors, this might alarm Vermont and Quebec, which have a large trading partnership of their own and, of course, exist within the relationship between the two countries. Given the ongoing trade disputes, plus questions about border security, asylum seekers, and elections on both sides of the international line, we have invited Quebec Premier Philippe Couillard to join us on the show today. He's on the phone from his office in Quebec City. Premier Couillard, nice to talk with you again.
Hello, everyone in Vermont.
So Quebec is the nation's largest producer of aluminum. I think the province has, 9 out of 10 of the country's primary aluminum plants. And you
Absolutely.
Have about 10,000 jobs that are primary jobs in that sector just in Quebec alone. More than 80% of your output is exports to Canada, or exports to the United States, excuse me. So can you just describe a little bit how these trade tariffs are affecting Quebec manufacturers?
Well, if we take aluminium specifically, you have to look at it both ways. Of course, Quebec aluminium represents roughly 90% of Canada's aluminium, but 50% of all the aluminium that is imported in the USA actually comes from Quebec, and most of it is immediately channeled in the U.S.'s manufacturing industry and defense industry. So you'll find Quebec aluminium and jet fighters, a variety of the defense industry product, and of course the car industry. So it's a vital link, and we are producing in Quebec roughly close to 3 million tons a year of aluminium. It takes years and years and years to build a capacity at that level, plus access to cheap, affordable, and renewable electricity, which we have. So it's always been a very, very profitable partnership on both sides of the border, always associated with the defense situation and industry. And we are, of course, in the middle of all the uncertainty that we go through now, quite surprised that such an action should be taken by the federal government in the States.
Are producers in Quebec already doing things differently, feeling this in any way, maybe laying people off? What's actually happening?
No. The producers of metal in Quebec can go through this because of the currency exchange situation and also because of their size. The issue we have is with the downstream businesses that are close to the U.S.-Canada border that will be assisted. Of course, we will assist these businesses with a variety of tools like loan guarantees to make sure that no one is laid off following this, frankly, very surprising and unnecessary measure taken by the U.S. And instead of fighting on tariffs on both sides, we should be allied, as we've always been, to tackle global trade issues, particularly the situation with China, because everybody knows and agrees on the fact that the issue on aluminium and steel is oversupply coming from China. And this tariff on both sides of the Canada-USA border will not address at all the true issue.
But I've also been reading that the tariffs on Chinese goods could actually affect Canadian producers because U.S. border and customs people could say, look, parts of this or some of this was actually made in China, ingredients come from China, therefore this is part of the trade tariffs on Chinese goods, and that could actually affect Canadian producers as well.
Yeah, this is called transshipment, and it's a significant concern with our U.S. partners at government. But we've addressed this even before the tariffs were instituted. We don't believe that it's still going on, but we will be very, very, we will put a lot of attention in this and immediately correct whatever may happen. It's not in our interest as well to be used as a transshipment reservoir by the Chinese metal industry.
Stephen in Barrie, Vermont says, what concerns you most about the trade war with the U.S. and with the tariffs?
Well, the economic impact on both sides of the border. I hope nobody in the U.S. believes that putting tariffs on Canada is going to help the U.S. economy. It's actually going to injure the economy in the U.S. So let's look back at the situation with softwood lumber. what happened was exactly what we told our U.S. partners that, that would happen, i.e. the price of homes went up. So who's paying? The U.S. middle class is paying more money for a new home. Now with metal, is the whole manufacturing industry and supply chain is going to be affected on both sides of the border. You know that roughly 9 million jobs in the USA depend on the Canada-U.S. trade. It's a very healthy and ancient relationship. Of course, the NAFTA needs to be modernized. At the time it was first drafted, there was no such thing as internet commerce and what we have now. So it needs to be adjusted to the new reality.
But what would you do? How would you adjust NAFTA to the new reality?
You have to incorporate this. For example, the fiscal policy has to be adjusted. In Quebec, we started taking the sales tax on non-material goods being sold on the internet, such as Netflix, for example. And we are now in talks with the federal government to add also tax equity on the furniture, for example, and what is tangible that comes through the border, out of only fairness with our own retail industry. That, you know, they see, and I'm sure it's the same in Vermont too. They see people coming in their showroom looking at things and going home and ordering the same on the internet, but not at their place at the shop that is closer to their home. And this is affecting the whole economy on both sides of the border. You know, the economies are so deeply linked. That's impossible that in when you do this, that you're not going to injure both sides of the border.
You know, there are Canadians who've been sharing ideas on how to basically boycott U.S. goods altogether because of these tariffs, or as much as possible. And, you know, some of them include things like Canadian toilet paper that you can buy instead of U.S. toilet paper, or Canadian rye instead of U.S. whiskey. You know, maple syrup, there are now tariffs on U.S. maple syrup. I'm sure in Quebec there's enough maple syrup to go around. But I'm curious if you are supportive of this kind of consumer pressure on U.S. industries and, by extension, the U.S. government?
I think people have to understand, and I think they do understand, that people in Quebec are really not happy about the situation. Here we are with a friend, a longstanding friend, an ally with whom we've fought wars, including recently against terrorism, with whom we were always allied on many global issues, suddenly turning against us, threatening our workers, our businesses, our farmers. This is something that nobody could see coming even a couple of years ago. So people are surprised, and people should not be surprised. You know, us Canadians are very polite and very low-key in general, but no one should be surprised with the fact that people are not happy at all. I'm sure that people in the States as well are not happy with the current policies. And we should remember some basic numbers. You know, you have in Vermont 30 Quebec-based companies that create more than 2,400 jobs in Vermont. And there are 1.5 million tourists visiting Vermont annually, spending over $100 million. I don't think this is going to stop. People love going to Vermont, and we have a great relationship. I have a great relationship with the governor of Vermont, Mr. Scott, who's come three times in Quebec, and I hope to see him again in August at Stowe with the Eastern Canadian premiers and New England governors. At this level, the relationship is very good, at the level of governors and large cities. The problem is with the president's administration, obviously. I've been to Washington recently and met with Secretary Ross and Secretary Perdue, very direct and frank conversations. Again, at the end of the day, everybody's going to suffer.
Let's talk a little bit about immigration and specifically asylum seekers. Mm-hmm. Basically, since President Trump took office, so since January of 2017, Canada and Quebec in particular has really seen a large influx of people who cross illegally from the United States into Canada to claim asylum. They're prohibited by an international agreement from doing this at an actual border crossing. If they'd like to claim asylum, they'll be turned back. But if they do it illegally, they can then claim asylum. And the past 2 months, just very recently, suggest that numbers may be slowing a little bit.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
These are often people who say they don't feel safe claiming asylum in the United States. So how has Quebec been able to handle this influx of asylum seekers?
Well, with a lot of difficulty. We've been very vocal with our federal government on the fact that, you know, last year we received 25,000 people and had to create the equivalent of 5 new schools in Montreal to educate the kids. We cannot leave the kids without an education. This is not part of our values. So we need the federal government, our federal government's assistance in this. We see the numbers going down. Our diplomats have been going around the world telling people at the source that, you know, this is not It's not a good way to enter Canada. It's not going to be a very pleasant experience. And the outcome is far from being guaranteed. So I think the message is starting to go around, and we see the numbers going down. But it's an issue that is global. You know, migration now is a global issue. We have to manage the border according to international trade agreements, international agreements, including the Geneva Convention. And, of course, we take upon these responsibilities very seriously, but there's a question of means and capacity. And in Quebec, right now, we were reaching the moment where we had no more capacity to get more people in our school, healthcare institutions, and other public services.
You know, you say that you've been telling people this is not going to be a pleasant situation for you. But, you know, if you compare it to what happens to people who cross the border illegally in the United States, it's a mm-hmm. pretty different scenario. I mean, in
True.
Quebec,
yeah.
asylum seekers get an apartment. They're allowed to move freely. In fact, they're encouraged to work so that they can rely less on government services.
Indeed.
So
indeed, yes.
It's
yeah.
quite a different scenario.
Yeah, the problem we have, though, and we take these as a moral obligation that we have to take care of the people that come at our door. We're not very happy with the situation, but we provide emergency health care. We put kids at school. At least they are given an education. We insist, you're right, we insist that people get to work, obtain the work permits from the federal government. The problem has been now the time it takes to process the demands, because once someone has stepped inside Canada outside of a recognized border station, they immediately claim refugee status, and they are entitled to due process, which includes a lawyer, all the processes that we have in Canada. But these are very, very long. They are too long, actually. It's a question of months, sometimes years, from the moment the person enters the country until they get a hearing and a decision on their refugee demand.
But in the meantime, aren't they living a normal life in Quebec?
Well, normal, if you want to qualify normal, and I would not say that it's necessarily a very pleasant life, but as you said, there are other situations that are probably worse than that. You know, they are given access to work, the kids go to school, and we provide them with emergency health care.
But no longer child care, right? You've actually said that subsidized child care is no longer available to refugees.
No, it's not. It's part of the law, actually. It would be against the law to give them access. We also give them access to other types of daycare facilities. But we have also said that the kids that were taken in the daycare facilities by mistake, let me say it that way, will not be expelled from the daycare centers. But we've sent the message now that they're just now not eligible. We have people in Quebec that are waiting for spots in the subsidized daycare centers operated by government. And they don't, you know, it would not sound fair or look fair for these people to be superseded by people coming just across the border a couple of weeks ago.
Let's go to Louise, who's calling in from Bromont, Quebec. Hi, Louise. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Yes, I'm a direct descendant of Guillaume Couillard from the early 1600s.
Yes.
Let me be absolutely I want to be absolutely clear. He was not an immigrant. He was
no.
a builder, a founder, a colonizer of industry, agriculture, schools, churches, roads, mm-hmm. bridges, and our own culture.
True.
Those coming here today are freeloaders. They refuse to integrate. They don't work. Worse yet, they only criticize and demand all that we have built and contributed to our own society.
Mm-hmm.
They insist that we adapt to them. Much to my horror, Canada border officials welcome those illegal scallywags with open arms and a fully equipped apartment to live in.
Louise, what would you like Premier Couillard to do?
Okay, I want a moratorium on immigration, because the population worldwide, the population explosion, is causing all the climate changes. I think we need to put the brakes on that immediately, because as Stephen Hawking said, the human species is bound to be extinct in the next three generations. We need to do something now. We don't need more people. We need less.
Louise, let's put that to the Premier. What do you think?
Well, it's totally false. We need actually more people, because we are experiencing a very significant situation of labor shortage in Quebec. And actually, 50% of the jobs that have been created since 2006 have been taken by newcomers. And second, there's a big difference to be made between immigration and the refugee situation. Immigration is a planned process, with a process that is well known. Quebec has the capacity to select immigrants. to integrate them, to teach them the language, whereas the refugee situation is something completely different, unplanned by nature, and governed by international conventions, so it's not at all the same thing. But do we need more people in Quebec? Absolutely, we need more people in Quebec. Where I am, you know, some businesses have to close certain shifts because there are not enough employees to carry the orders and make the business go forward. It's a very detrimental situation to our economy. We also train our kids better. We will keep people on the workforce when they get older as well. And as well, we will insist on getting immigration at the level where it is now, and insist on getting economic immigration, qualified workers, business people, which are coming now to Quebec in large quantities and have been an asset to Quebec and will continue to be an asset to Quebec.
On that question of people who are coming in and seeking asylum or seeking refugee status, it sounds like you've been actually moving some of these families and people to different parts of Quebec where there is a labor shortage and actually, you know, having them sort of fill in the gaps where there have been
immigration
shortages.
Not refugee claimants.
Not refugee claimants.
Immigration, of course, we tried to incentivize them to go and settle in the regions because we have significant labor shortage issues in the regions. But the refugee, again, is a totally different situation. And again, it's very important not to confuse the two and not to take one for the other. Immigration is a very, very different process than the refugee and the migration situation around the world. And it has to be treated differently as well, and is being treated differently.
We got a note from David in Isle Lamotte in Vermont, who writes in to say, I wanted to take a bus from Burlington to Boston recently, but upon arrival at the Greyhound stop at Burlington Airport, there was no bus. The clerk told me there was a 2 to 3 hour delay as ICE was holding the bus, which originates in Montreal, and had no idea when it would be released. The clerk told me it's a common problem lately. I ended up driving to Boston. And David wonders, has anyone else complained of this? And Premier Couillard, I wonder your perspective on these ICE agents boarding buses that are coming from Canada.
Well, I've never heard this. Of course, it's good to know that these incidents happen. And if we can do something, we'll do. But something we cannot do is change our winter conditions. So, you know, this is bound to happen. And then with climate change, climate swings are going to be even more extreme than they've been for the recent years and the recent decades even. And we'll see.
Oh, wait. I think there's a translation problem here. When he talks about ICE, he means immigration and customs enforcement, not the weather condition.
I think. I was wondering what the point
was. I know it's cold in Canada, but it's not that
cold in
June.
And it's cold in Vermont, too. So I was wondering what the point was.
Exactly. Right. No.
Again, what is it?
It's immigration and customs enforcement agents boarding buses that have originated in Quebec or buses that are up near the Canadian border. And we've heard reports of this as well, that they're boarding buses to check the documents of people to make sure that they all have legal status in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Well, yes, we know. And you know, we insist also when we discuss the trade situation, we have to remember that the borders and the border between our two countries should remain fluid but safe. And we insist on security, too. So, yes, due processes have to be put in place and people have to be vigilant. But the overarching interest of our two countries is that the country and country's borders remain fluid. You know, we have how many trucks a day crossing the border, and the livelihood of a lot of people depend on that. So we need again to, and we are working with our neighbors on this, both at the federal and the provincial level.
But it doesn't sound like you take a specific position on the appropriateness or lack thereof of ICE agents boarding buses in the United States that have originated in Canada.
Well, I'm not going to comment on internal U.S. political issues. I've got enough of my own.
John is on the line with us from Shoreham, Vermont. Hi, John. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Sure. Hello.
John, go right ahead.
Okay, hi, my question is, the media is pretty adamant about reporting U.S. Tariffs imposed on countries like China and Canada. But my question is, what are the tariffs imposed on the U.S. by Canada so we can kind of better gauge similar products if there is any difference?
John, thanks for the call. So the question is about tariffs, and we know it's been highly publicized, the U.S. tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. And on July 1st, Canada imposed new tariffs on United States products that don't just include metals, but include a lot of consumer goods, ketchup, for example, and stuff.
Yeah.
But are there other tariffs that had already been imposed? Or, you know, John would like a little bit of a rundown.
Well, you know, this was made done only after the U.S. tariffs were introduced, and in our view, there should be no tariffs at all. It should be we should keep with an improved NAFTA treaty and keep trading on both sides of the border. It's roughly for $16 billion worth of goods that has been hit by counter tariffs from Canada. If I look at Vermont specifically, the products that have been targeted are related to maple sugar, strangely, maple syrup, and sugar confection products, and also roasted coffee, a very exotic type of distribution. But we are, and the federal government was looking for ways to show that tariffs could go both ways. Now, we are very cognizant of the different size of our economies, and I always tell people on both sides of the border there is no future in a trade war. And it's so absurd even to think about the possibility of a trade war between the Canada and the USA. It just, I hope, will serve as a wake-up call that, you know, let's stop all this and let's modernize NAFTA and move forward and look at the global issues on which we have to collaborate with one another.
Let's go to another call here while we're talking about trade again. And this is Derval calling in from Brownburg, Chatham, Quebec. Hi, Derval. Go right ahead.
Hello. What I want to ask is why can't we have an ICE-type immigration deal? Because I know Quebec has its own immigration system.
Well, you know, it's not exactly our own immigration system. You know, we are the only province that can actually select immigrants, not refugees. Again, I insist on the difference. Refugees that want to come to Quebec go through a screening process, are given points, and we issue a certificate of selection. And after this, the federal government takes over to do health and security verification and bring the people and their relatives in the country. So it's not a different system. It's part of the process that is governed in Quebec, and Quebec is the only province to have this capacity. I wish that other provinces could do the same.
Let's go to Roger calling in from Richmond, Vermont. Hi, Roger. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. Bonjour.
Bonjour.
Bienvenue au Vermont.
Bienvenue.
I'm a sugar maker from Richmond, and I have a question related to the caller two ago. Obviously, the maple trade going back and forth across the border is really important. I think on both sides, there's a lot of syrup sold in the United States, produced in Quebec, and the pricing in Quebec is what really affects the price in the U.S. And I was wondering if you had any insight into further changes. Obviously, there's a tariff going north across the border now on syrup. Do you anticipate if there are changes in NAFTA, will there be further tariffs on syrup coming south? Because that would really, really impact both many parts of the business here in Vermont.
Oh, well, thanks for the question. Before the U.S. tariffs were introduced, this was never even mentioned or discussed. It was not on the table at all. So, we just hope, again, that this is going to be only a temporary measure, that people will come to their senses and the common sense will prevail. And ideally, all the tariffs should be removed, both in metal and what the tariffs that have been introduced by Canada. And the renewal of NAFTA should make things simpler, not more complicated. And should take into consideration the way both countries have been operating their economies, in agriculture particularly. It mainly involves the discussions on agriculture, mainly involve the dairy industry, as you know, but not so much the sugar. Whereas there's actually a true supply management system going on between the U.S. and Mexico on sugar, there's no such thing north country here.
Let's go to another call here from Andre in Stowe, Vermont. Hello, Andre. Go right ahead.
Hello. Bonjour, Premier.
Hello.
Bonjour, Premier. How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm looking forward to coming to Stowe soon and meet with my colleague, Mr. Scott, and other governors.
Excellent, excellent. We look forward to your visit. I'd like to ask a very serious question that we've all been very much concerned with the past decade. When will the Montreal Expos return?
That's a really serious question, and I'm a baseball fan myself, and I played a lot of baseball, and the Montrealers love baseball. Actually, there was a demonstration recently. There was a game that was organized in Montreal at the Big O, at the Olympic Stadium, and more than 60,000 people showed up. So there's definitely a market in Montreal for Major League Baseball. Of course, the question is where does the public fund, do the public funds intervene? I believe that the public private funding should be first on the line. And if something needs to be done, it should be done on a business basis. And we are, you know, I know there's a group of people on the private sector in Montreal planning for a new stadium and trying to get a team back in Montreal. So I hope we do get it. I keep great memories. When I was a kid, I was living in Montreal, used to walk to Cherry Park, which was a small baseball stadium. You could actually hear the players talking with one another, and the sound on the ball of the bats and everything was so wonderful in the summer. So I hope we get this back again.
I have some great childhood memories of seeing the Expos play. That would be an interesting thing to come back. Let's talk about something else, though, and let's turn to marijuana. So marijuana will soon be legal to consume across Canada, but provinces are allowed to set some of their own rules around cannabis. And it sounds like Quebec's rules are among the most, if not the most restrictive in Canada, or I guess the least permissive, depending on how you look at it, including a prohibition on home cultivation. Why are you taking a cautious approach?
This came from our federal government. It was not in our plan to introduce such a legislation. Well, the federal government used its actually program, and we cannot blame them for doing what they said they would do and made it legal. Now we have provinces, we have to deal with the practical matters such as distribution, trade, road safety, etc. So what we did before adopting our own bill, which was adopted in June, just a recent June that we just went through, we went around the province and asked people what they felt, how they felt about it. And, you know, I wouldn't say to our surprise, but we felt that people were a little bit apprehensive about the whole thing. The message we got is the following. Okay, we understand you need to go ahead and have this law and govern the situation, but please be careful. Do not trivialize the product. Try starting with a door that is almost shut and open the door progressively as we go forward. This is why we had then this question of home growth was actually one of the most frequently mentioned in our consultations around Quebec. So we basically went where the public is now. If we can go further, we'll see. It's all the question of society's tolerance for this. We understand the rationale is to keep the black market away from the product. Fine if it works. We'll see if it works. And we will organize a state-owned network of distribution and also online sales through our a subsidiary of our liquor board. Hopefully this will be done safely, with education, prevention, and without ever trivializing the product.
I don't know if you know the answer to this, but I have a curious question. So Vermont has legalized marijuana. So marijuana is legal in Vermont. It will soon be legal in Quebec. I'm curious how you're advising people about the legal ramifications of crossing the federal border, because, of course, marijuana is still federally illegal in the United States. But I'm wondering, if someone crosses the border into Canada from Vermont, facing Canadian federal border security, will they be allowed into the country with cannabis?
Well, that's a good question. Honestly, I could not give you a precise answer on that one. I'll have to go around. You know, the bottom line is that's legal. It's legal. It will be legal in Canada in October. So nobody can be subjected to a criminal charge for having marijuana with them. So that should not change, whether it's coming from the States or locally grown in Canada. The stuff that's going to be sold in Canada, in Quebec, and other provinces will have to be produced in Canada and in Quebec. So we have producers now getting online, if I can say so, waiting to sell their product.
So you will be in Vermont, actually, very soon. I think the Conference of Eastern Canadian Premiers and New England Governors is the 12th to the 14th of August. What are you likely going to be talking about? There's plenty to discuss.
I first want to emphasize the very good working relationship I have with Governor Scott, who visited Quebec 3 times. And I told you earlier the number of Quebec businesses that operate in Vermont are creating jobs and prosperity on both sides of the border. Of course, what we will want to do is discuss trade issues, but I suspect that we will all want to project an image where we work together and we don't believe that trade wars are a way to go between Canada and the USA. I still have to meet one governor in the States when I go there quite often, and one mayor of a large city that does not want NAFTA to be renewed. And this is what I hear from all sides. So if we can get out of this meeting with the same message, that would be ideal. And I believe that this is what my colleagues from the northeastern USA and eastern Canada will also say.
So safe to say you will be trying to have a unified approach to questions about trade tariffs and renegotiating NAFTA.
Absolutely, yes. Yes.
That's Philippe Couillard, Premier of Quebec. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us, and we look forward to seeing what comes out of that conference in August. Thanks very much.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye.